Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Jessica Hochman, pediatrician and mom of three. On this podcast, I like to talk about various pediatric health topics, sharing my knowledge not only as a doctor, but also as a parent. Ultimately, my hope is that when it comes to your children's health, you feel more confident, worry less, and enjoy your parenting experience as much as possible. Many of us parents have children who are overweight, and it's hard to know exactly how to navigate the issue. Do we ignore the situation for fear of hurt feelings? Or do we address the issue? But then, what if we talk about it too much and create a psychological issue for our kids? Here today to answer these questions is Dr. Sheila Carroll. Dr. Carroll is a pediatrician, an obesity medicine physician, and a life coach. And she helps coach parents with children who are overweight. And her ultimate goal is to make parenting around food feel less hard. If you're concerned about your child's weight and health, and you're eager to make meaningful changes for your family, you are going to want to listen to this episode. And also, before we get started, if you're enjoying this podcast, please take a moment to leave a review and share it with your friends. Thank you so much for helping spread the word of Ask Dr. Jessica. Dr. Sheila Carroll, I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on Ask Dr. Jessica.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Jessica.
So tell everybody, what do you do for work?
Well, I am a board-certified pediatrician. I'm also board-certified in obesity medicine. I'm a certified life coach. I was, just like you, a practicing pediatrician for about 23 years. And in the past year or so, I have transitioned out of clinical medicine as I knew it into a life coach for parents of kids who are struggling with extra weight. And or families that just want to change their lifestyle, to focus on health and figure out all the things that they can do, that the parents can do it from a health perspective and a lifestyle perspective that will help their kids thrive.
And this is such a pertinent topic, I think, for so many families. So many of us, we read the statistics about obesity in children. We know that there's so much against us with all the processed foods around us. It just seems like such a battle that parents are up against. So I think this is a really meaningful part of medicine that you're working in.
Thanks. I really feel drawn to this and super passionate about this, well, for a lot of reasons, but I'm a mom myself. And, you know, I'm living in this same, you know, stew or mix that we're all living in, all of these highly processed foods, all of the screens, the sedentary lifestyle that, you know, is very prevalent. And it's challenging. It's just a challenge for parents. I'm also super passionate about this as a former child who struggled with my own weight. Since I was about 9 or 10 years old, I always carried more weight than I wanted to. I weighed more than I wanted to. And I couldn't figure out what to do. I tried everything. I was a big athlete. I loved playing sports. I was super active, but the foods I was eating and the foods we were eating at home were, I was just gaining weight with those. And I was really struggling with that. And I, now at my age, 55, I look back and I think, oh my goodness, I wish my parents just didn't know. They of course would have helped me. Had they known, you know, like, oh, we really, you know, Oreos, probably not the greatest food to be buying and bringing home, you know, making chocolate chip cookies every day after school, you know, yes, wonderful in theory, but horrible for like my metabolic health and just my health in general. So I want to help parents who want to help their kids avoid like decades of struggle and wasting a lot of mental energy and emotional energy on their weight and all of the things that go along with this.
And I'm just thinking, as you're telling your story, I imagine your experience must have played a role in your career choice.
Yeah. You know, ever since I was a little kid, I loved little kids. So I loved babies. I was a babysitter. When I was 10 years old, my dad is a doctor. And so I kind of followed in his footsteps in a lot of ways. And when it came time to choose, I picked pediatrics because I just love, I just want to help kids, protect kids, and try to help them, you know, help them be as healthy as possible so they can just be kids and live their childhood lives and not have to struggle with overweight or anxiety, depression, or any of these things, you know, that are now, we used to see them mainly in adults, and you probably see in your own practice, they're creeping down. They're creeping downward in age, and younger kids are getting diagnosed with health problems that used to be reserved for adults.
Yes, no, it's true. Diabetes, obesity. We didn't see these issues as much in children as we do today. Mm-hmm, so I have to say, I love your perspective because you are a trained pediatrician. So you understand the medical perspective of being overweight, but then you're also a life coach and you seem like a very sensitive person and you have your own life experience. What a nice combination that you can offer to help families as they're navigating how to help their kids that are overweight.
Thank you. And for me, my personal like cresting over my problems, the hump of my problem, only came about through life coaching. I had been, you know, a doctor for a long time. And I don't know what you learned in medical school, but what I learned was it's calories in, calories out, you know, eat less, move more. That, and I know there's different models now, but that was what I had learned. And that had been my advice to patients for a long time.
Yes. Yeah, so we learned did you ever learn the 5-2-1-0? Five
yes.
fruits and vegetables a day,
yeah.
No more than 2 hours of screen time a day, 1 for 1 hour of exercise a day, and 0 for 0 sweet drinks.
Yeah,
and while that's good advice, it just seems so trite and so formulaic, and it didn't get to the root of the feelings behind eating. So I agree with you. Our education gave us something, but not what I think would really help patients.
Yeah. But even if you did 5-2-1-0, but you ate all the other things in addition, you know, if you're eating highly processed foods or foods with a lot of added sugars, in addition to that, you're still going to struggle with your weight.
Absolutely.
So here's the thing, why even as a pediatrician, and now I just work with the parents and not the kids, because this, what you and I were talking about earlier, is like the life coaching part of it or the thinking part of it, the trying to figure out why you're eating something and the thoughts you're having, the thoughts that are creating your feelings and your feelings that are driving your actions of eating or not eating. That's a very advanced meta skill, a thinking about your thinking skill that requires a mature prefrontal cortex. Most kids don't have a completely mature prefrontal cortex. We know it doesn't mature until the mid-20s, but parents have that. So, for example, if we take emotional eating, that is what's keeping a lot of us adults or a lot of adults overweight. You know, we eat when we're bored, when we're frustrated, we eat when we're happy, when we're sad, you know, all the things. But especially some of those negative emotions, combined with the food supply and the food options that are available to us today. It's not like when you've had a really sad or bad day, you're not probably reaching for, you're not going to binge on 3 apples or, you know, you are going probably for something that's a little bit higher sugar content because of what that does to our brain chemistry and the hormones in our brain. And that's just how we're wired evolutionarily as very ancient human beings. Now trying to thrive from a health perspective and thrive metabolically in today's processed food world. And so when you choose, say, the ice cream or the bag of Doritos or whatever, you do get some relief from that negative emotion because of the dopamine that gets released in your brain. And it kind of buffers or tamps down your negative emotion. So frankly, you do feel a little bit better. So it works. It's a good strategy, except the negative health outcomes to people are very frustrated with, oh, I'm gaining weight. When you can learn to understand, oh, you know, I'm feeling frustrated or I'm feeling restless. I'm feeling lonely, whatever feeling you're feeling. And then is eating ice cream actually going to solve that problem for me? You know, that food really only solves hunger, true physical hunger. So I think this is such valuable information to be able to share with parents because then over their, the course of their years with their kids, this, you know, however long, 18 years, 20 year runway you have with your children, if you knew that as a parent, you're going to be able to transmit that message to them. And so they'll head into their adult life already knowing, like, oh, if I'm having a bad day, I don't need to reach for alcohol or, you know, over scrolling or extra, you know, sugary food or whatever. I need to feel my feelings, and I can feel my feelings, and I know how to do that. And that will really help our human body stay as healthy as possible.
I think what you're saying is so profound, and I can relate so much to the idea that our thoughts become our feelings and our feelings become our actions. I know myself personally, when I was in college, I used to, you know, I was pre-med, it was very stressful, and I would love to have snacks by me while I would study. Having snacks gave me something to look forward to. It made studying easier for me. And I remember I would snack on dried mangoes, and I would eat a bag of dried mangoes, and I would have, you know, I would look forward to having candy or snacks by my side. And then honestly, within a couple of years, I kind of look back on this now with admittedly a little bit of embarrassment, but I gained 40 pounds. And I remember my parents didn't know what to do with me, because here I was, I'd always been, you know, in good shape in high school. I ran cross country, and then I start college, I'm pre-med, and I gain a lot of weight. And I think it all had to do with the stress behind studying and seeking some enjoyment while I was studying. And so you're right. I had to sort of identify where was this coming from? Why was I feeling hungry? Why was I not satiated with mealtimes? And then I remember going to medical school, and I'm so grateful because I met a friend. Her name is Jocelyn. She's been on the podcast before. What she influenced me with study breaks. We would take walks together. And instead of sitting and snacking and getting junk food, we would take these nice walks, which I actually started to really enjoy. And I trained myself to look forward to those walks. We would talk. We would, you know, we would talk about life. We would have fun walking. And by the end of the walk, I'd feel that natural high from exercise and being outside. But, you know, it took some time to sort of rewire how I dealt with those feelings. I absolutely relate to what you're talking about.
Yeah, that's such a powerful story. Yeah. So when I'm working with my clients, I call that like the walk that you took would be like a natural pleasure. You know, like you got the pleasure of connection with your friend, and that releases, you know, dopamine and endorphins too in our brain. Just not the same, like, huge kind of, you know, I call it unnatural pleasure that, like, are these highly processed foods or this scrolling on social media or whatever. So, yes, really, you know, that's another thing parents can do is to help their kids try to identify and see the natural pleasures of life. It doesn't just have to be about the huge, like, unnatural pleasure of all the refined sugar coming at them.
I think you're right. Looking for natural pleasures or trying to brainstorm what to do when you have those feelings, an alternative solution.
Right.
An alternative solution to getting candy and whatever the junk that's calling your name, maybe.
Yes. Yeah. And so when parents learn to do that for themselves, then they can help their kids learn how to do that for themselves over time.
How can you teach kids to not be emotional eaters?
Well, one important way would be to help our kids understand what they're choosing to eat, how their body is actually feeling before they eat it and after they eat it. Because over time, if you pay attention to that, you may find, like, oh, when I eat, you know, for whatever, put fill in the blank, cotton candy, you know, when I eat cotton candy, I don't feel that good, or I'm tired the next day, or I get a little headache or something like that. So that's a super important skill, I think, because that's the ultimate goal we want for our kids, is this autonomy of them to make their own choice, but they also tie that into their results or their, how they're feeling or the result that that gives them. And then, because then the next time, they'll say, oh, last time I ate that, I didn't feel so great. So what could I eat instead? And so sometimes I think we just eat and we don't really tie it in to how our body feels. And there's a really wonderful tool that we can, that sometimes I teach parents to teach their kids, depending on the age, but it's called a hunger scale. And you kind of go from like minus 10 to zero being like neutral, you're not really hungry, and then to plus 10 being like the fullest you could ever imagine being. And, you know, depending on how your child, you know, how old they are and what they can understand, sometimes we use the gas tank analogy, like, is your tank running out of gas? Does it need a little bit? And you don't want to, you don't want it to become too full. And you can figure out whatever that range is for your child. But as an adult, if we can learn, as a parent, if you can learn to eat to satisfy your physical hunger and not overeat or emotionally just because it tastes good or you're enjoying the company or you're, and you just keep eating. But if we can listen, learn the skill of listening to our bodies while we're eating, and we parents learn how to do that and we teach that to our kids, what a wonderful skill that will skyrocket their health for the rest of their lives.
Yes. Yes. I've tried that with my 7-year-old. She seems to have amnesia with when too much bad food doesn't make her feel good, or I shouldn't say bad food, but too much junk makes her feel bad. Yeah. I've tried when she's overeaten brownies or candy and she's complained of stomach aches. I'll say, see, next time maybe we'll have less so your body feels better. But we're still learning. We're still working on it.
I wonder if what you ate had anything to do with how you're feeling right now. You know, but you know, you might think she has amnesia, but she's learning. She's experiencing that. She's tucking that away. And my son does the same thing. He's like, I feel great. I'm like, really? It's fine. It's just a learning.
It's fine. I did it as a kid for sure. 100%, for sure.
100%.
And it's just, it's all part of it.
Teaching them skills that they'll already have. You know, this is what I love is like when parents learn these skills and teach them to their kids, your kids are going to know this when they're 20, 22, 25. You know, they don't need to learn, wait till they're 40 or 50 to learn these things.
Yes. I think about that all the time, that as parents, it's really a gift for our kids if we can teach them better habits as children so they don't have to think about undoing those habits as they get to be older. Because I do think you form your preferences often as a kid. If you learn to like certain foods and like the way healthy foods taste, not to say you can't change as you get older, but it just makes it a little easier, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. You're forming your habits, but you're also forming your identity and your self-concept. Oh, I'm a healthy person. Oh, I'm a person who eats healthy food. Oh, I'm a person who moves. Oh, I'm a person who gets the right amount of sleep. I mean, these are really powerful. If you see yourself as that, that's who you are. That's what you do. And if your kid sees themselves as that, because you see yourself as that and you've helped them see themselves as that, like, that's a slam dunk.
It's so true how much self-confidence goes a long way. I'm curious, when you talk to parents at first and they ask you advice on what to feed their kids, do you give them general guidance on what foods to think about, what foods to keep in the house?
Yes, if they want that, for sure. You know, my general guidance is to try to cut back on highly processed foods. The foods with a lot of added sugars and really, I feel like a lot of pediatric overweight or obesity is driven by insulin resistance, which is driven by all the foods and drinks that kids are eating and drinking with all of these added sugars. I think the American Heart Association says a child 0 to 2 years old, they recommend 0 grams of sugar a day. So all of those things like those little puffs or those little yogurts or, you know, whatever, if they have added sugars, the recommendation is not to give your child these things under 2 years old. They should have no food with added sugars. And that's not include. So we're talking about fruit and vegetables. That's not what we're talking about. And then from 2 years old to adulthood, you know, somewhere around the tune of 6 teaspoons or 24, 25 grams of sugar a day. So the first place I start with trying to help parents figure out what they should eat or what they could be serving is to really kind of do a little bit of a audit on what are we eating right now? You know, the truth of the matter is all the recommendations that I'm giving families to eat, which would be to really reduce as, you know, as much added sugar as possible. And just really switch to kind of whole, minimally processed foods that you're cooking at home, you know, and decreasing seed oil exposure, because that causes whole body inflammation. And just eating real food, then that is a great way for any child to eat, no matter what you weigh.
I've noticed in some of your writings that you've talked about creating shopping lists for kids. So would that be, so can you explain to parents listening, what would a shopping list look like for kids? Like what is the idea behind doing that?
Well, the idea behind doing that is a parent to sit down with your child and talk about the foods that the child likes. And all right, let's try to get the as many, and you could start even by writing down every food that your child likes, you know, chicken nuggets or, you know, frozen pizza, you know, and then kind of, you know, after you're done with those, you know, the top, the heavy hitters, you go to like the vegetables, and which vegetables are they willing to already eat? Which fruit are they willing to already eat? What meat or, you know, vegetable, you know, if you're vegetarian. So the whole idea is you just make in conjunction with your child, because it does help to have your child be part of this. Kids really want to be healthy. They really do. And if you allow them a chance to have some input into what you're going to be serving them and cooking them, they're more likely to be on board and eat that. So make a food list. Then you can really talk about it. Okay, well, let's look at chicken nuggets. You know, for me, I would look at that. I would look at the ingredient list. You can go over it with your child and you could say, you know, these are like a sometimes food for us. If the ingredient lists are something that you don't want to have, or you look at the added sugars. I think the other thing that parents, it's a really powerful tool for parents is to understand how to read a food label. And, you know, for me, it's not so much about the calories. It's more about the added sugars. You know, my son's friend brought over a Gatorade the other day. It had 69 grams of sugar in it in one bottle. So, you know, the maximum is you're supposed to get in a day is 24 grams. That's like two plus days in one 12-ounce bottle. So I think a lot of times parents just aren't, we're just not aware of how much added sugar is in. If you look at something like barbecue sauce or spaghetti sauce or yogurt with fruit added or granola bars, some of the things we even think are like, quote, healthy, all the added sugars in them, breakfast cereals, they're just not healthy for us, because when you eat that added sugar, your insulin level goes up. And when your insulin level goes up, then you are in fat storage mode. So you can burn whatever you can burn, but what calories you're not burning, then you're storing as fat. And the biggest problem is just helping parents understand about fructose. And I think fructose is super, super dangerous for kids. It's not only neutral. It's like, oh, it's just sugar. No, it's actually harmful for your kid, for you and for your kid.
Fructose high fructose corn syrup?
They're the same thing. You know, they're actually almost exactly the same thing. High fructose corn syrup is somewhere between 40% fructose or 65% fructose. It can have varying degrees. And then table sugar, which I think most people don't realize this, table sugar is 50% fructose. It's 50% glucose and 50% fructose. So, okay, if you avoid things with high fructose corn syrup, great. But you're still getting a big sugar, big fructose load if you are eating things with table sugar or any of the other sugars. Even honey has fructose in it.
Just to clarify, but fructose is the sugar that comes from fruit.
Yes.
I try not to limit fruit from kids.
But look how it's packaged. So fructose in whole fruit is packaged with fiber. It would take a lot to eat 3 apples or 4 oranges, which is what you would be eating or drinking in a little glass, which has no fiber. So yes, fructose in fruit is fine. That's not what we're talking about here. Because your body is designed to handle that, because the fiber slows down the digestion and your liver doesn't have to process the huge fructose load. Unless you did somehow eat 10 apples all at once, then you would have a problem with that, you know?
So I think what you're saying is not to have added sugars. It's different from sugars that are from nature, but the fructose that's added, we want to avoid.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah.
With my kids, I was hesitant at first to talk about food labels because I didn't want to draw too much attention to food. You know, I wanted them just to enjoy this blissful childhood where they didn't have to think about food like us adults. We've talked about added sugars and we'll look at labels, and they actually like looking at labels. They look at it. It's almost like a budget, like a financial budget where we say, you know what? You can't go over 25 in a day. So let's make choices. You want the chocolate bar? Well, the chocolate bar has 25 grams of added sugar. That means tonight when we have ice cream, you're not going to be able to have ice cream because you ran out of your budget. And so watching my kids make these decisions, I actually think they like it. You know, so they'll say, okay, I'll have a half a chocolate bar. And then tonight I'll have a small scoop of ice cream. And it empowers them to make overall healthier choices. So I actually have found that going over labels with them has been a plus.
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful educational tool too, and super empowering for kids. And honestly, the world that we live in, we have, if we are going to be teaching our kids to preserve and protect their own good health, they are going to need to learn to read labels at some point. What I say to my son is just because something's sold doesn't mean it's actually safe for you to eat, safe for your body to eat. They're selling it, yes, but let's look and see and try to think on purpose. Do we think this is good for your body?
That's true. And what a nice point you made that kids do want to be healthy. I think we assume as parents that they would rather have the fast food choices or the soft drinks, but education goes a long way. They do want to be healthy.
Yeah, they want to feel good. They want to have energy. And so I think they want food to taste good and they want to be healthy. We can make healthy food that our kids will eat and will like to eat.
And I think that's such a helpful point because so often I find the conversations with families and children about eating is focused around what they should not eat. It's a lot of no's.
Right.
You know, no, you can't have that. No, you can't have that. And what I love about the idea of a shopping list and keeping plentiful good foods in the house that kids like to eat is there's less of this negative talk around food. I'd like to have more positive experiences, more yeses, so that kids don't feel like they're wanting for food or they're looking for food. They can feel satisfied with what's at our house.
Yeah, I agree. So when you shift away from, you know, feeling deprived or feeling restricted into, I could eat that if I want to, but I don't want to. I want to eat this because I like how it makes my body feel. I like the results I get when I eat it.
I have a lot of families where their children are a little overweight and they're not sure how to talk to their kids about weight or should they talk to their kids about weight. So what is your recommendation for families when parents come to you and they're concerned about their children being a little overweight? How should they talk to their children?
In general, my recommendation is I don't even think we need to use the word weight when we're talking to kids. If they're older teenagers, then, you know, if they're specifically like, I want to talk about my weight. Okay, let's talk about it, you know. But with younger kids and even with the older kids, I recommend focusing on health. And
yes.
These are the things that we want to do to stay healthy or to, you know, kind of preserve our health. And you don't need to talk about weight because there's a lot of really unhealthy ways to make the scale go down, right? If all we care about is weight or what size clothes you're wearing, you can get there pretty in a lot of unhealthy ways. And that is the exact opposite of what we want. We want to raise healthy eaters who have a wonderful relationship with food, who know how food works with their body, and who eventually, as they age, step into their autonomy and their role of, I'm choosing to eat this because I think it's going to keep me healthy. I like the way I feel. It tastes good. And I know it's good for me. And so I like talking about health because it's not no one feels bad when you say, well, let's try to be healthy. You know, when I was a little kid, the focus was on weight and trying to lose weight, for me to lose weight. And I felt bad about that. It hurt inside. It was embarrassing. It was shameful. I was so little, I didn't even know what to do with all of that, you know, all of those feelings.
It's true. And then you're probably hyper-focused on a number and thinking that a number will make things better in your life. And that's not really fair for a kid.
No, it's not. It's not. And it's not the number that we care about, you know?
No.
I think, you know, when kids overweight or obesity, depending on, you know, whatever number you're looking at, it's kind of a marker, you know, of how your body's responding to multiple different things, not just to food, but your sleep, your movement, your stress management. So it's like a symptom of a bigger issue, I think, than like the real problem itself. The problem is not the number on the scale. Let's try to really look at all of the lifestyle factors that are going to get you feeling great. And, you know, for me, like if you are, you know, if you plot somebody out on the scale or whatever, and their BMI is a little bit elevated, but they have tons of energy, they're growing well, they're sleeping well, they're eating healthy food, they're, you know what I mean? You know, and they're thriving. Okay. And then parents can keep an eye on that and just keep reinforcing all the good behavior, all the good things that they're doing. I don't think that we're going for a number, to me at least.
No, as you're talking, I'm thinking, you know, even though I'm a pediatrician and literally every day I'm weighing kids and I'm looking at their growth percentages and their weight percentages, my own children, I honestly do not know what they weigh. We don't have a working scale in our house. I mean, conveniently, the batteries run out. I have no idea what they weigh. I don't ask them about weight. I don't want to put it in their head, I think. So the conversations in our home are really about health.
Yes.
To your point, we talk about growing foods, foods that make you feel good, foods that'll help you go to the bathroom with ease, will help your tummy feel good, will help you feel strong, be a fast runner, be a better athlete. That's really how we talk about it. And I think it's true what you're saying. It doesn't really matter. It matters, do they feel healthy? Are they healthy?
Yeah.
Mentally and physically.
Right. Exactly.
Do you find that in your venture to work with families, are you finding a lot of success?
Yeah, in multiple different ways. And this is you probably find this the same way. This is one of the rewarding things about working with families or being a pediatrician. You know, I'm seeing success from a health perspective. Yes. Oh, this family has made these changes that I know are going to benefit them from a health perspective. Sometimes we can track things via labs and we're like, oh, their liver enzymes improved or their fasting insulin improved, you know? So then sometimes we're like, oh yeah, like check, you know, on the actual numbers. But sometimes it's, oh, well, we're just getting more sleep or, oh, we have these, stress, you know, skills, breathing skills or stress reduction skills that now the child has learned. And the other thing that I really love to work on with families is the parents and the child's relationship and the parent and the child feeling so connected and making these changes from a place of already the parents fully accepting, first of all, the parents fully accepting themselves, because lots of times we parents end up with some guilt or shame or regret. Oh, how did I feed my child like this? So now they're slightly overweight, or how did I feed them? You know, I should have done better. I could have, you know, so first thing is we work on, okay, let's get, you know, some understanding about that we are doing the best that we can. And have a relationship with ourselves as a parent. And then before changing anything for the child, to have the parent really have the true deepest belief that their child is already perfect, already valuable, 100% valuable, 100% worthy, just as they are. They don't need to lose weight to be better, to be a better person, to be more acceptable, to be whatever. you know, that's, so we start from this place of like, for a parent to really get to the place of accepting. Because lots of times parents, we want our kids to be slightly different than they are. And there's, that's fine. We can want them to grow. We can want them to change. That's fine. But what, you know, when kids look at their parents and they see reflected back to them, this person gets me, this person loves me for who I am right now. It's like a mirror that they're looking in and they're seeing like goodness and love reflected back to them. It's so much easier to be willing for a child to be willing to make any change at all or to be open to the change because they don't feel like they have to change to be accepted or loved or valued by their parents. See what I'm saying?
That's so powerful. No, I think that's so powerful. It's true. People want to feel like they're getting loved unconditionally, not loved if I do this, this, or that, but yeah, as loved for who they are, as they are.
Right.
It's the same idea with kids, especially with their parents. They want to feel like they're going to love them as they are.
Even though I think when parents might say something like that, they do totally love their child. You know, it's not yes. that. And some of it is fear-based. Like, oh, I'm worried if you gain weight, won't get asked to the prom, won't get married, won't get on the sports team, you know, whatever. So sometimes I think
fears.
Parents say things out of fear. So I work a lot with parents to just kind of become aware of what thoughts they're actually having and how that's making them feel. And because we know, like we said already, our thoughts create our feelings drive our actions. So our thoughts and our feelings are so powerful to what we do. And, you know, you can do the same thing, but if it's coming from two different places, for example, you know, you could have a salad, you know, or, you know, we'll just go back to food. If you're feeling like I'm punishing myself, I feel like I need to restrict myself, fine, I'm going to have a salad. So that's, you know, you're taking action from a feeling, from a kind of a negative feeling, and you might not enjoy eating that salad. But if you have the feeling like, oh, I'm committed to my health, or I want to eat these vegetables because I want all the vitamins and mineral, you know, you eat that salad, you're going to have a different experience of eating that salad than it's the same thing. You're still eating a salad, but you're coming at it from a different feeling. And so that's what we need to really work on as parents when we're helping our kids or we're making these changes for our family, because we want to make sure we're coming at it from a feeling of love, commitment, you know, living our values, hopefully health is one of the family values, and, you know, coming at it from a place of just trying to help your kid and keep them as healthy as possible from a place of love.
I think that's such a great point. You can want your kids to get better because you want the best for them. Like I can want my kids to be a little more polite or say please or thank you. I think it's fair for parents to want to mold their kids to be the best human beings they can be, but also they deserve to feel unconditional love from their parents. And as a parent, that feels the best.
Yeah, for sure.
To let your kids really know and feel that you're there for them no matter what is so important. I've never thought about that point in terms of connecting it to childhood obesity and what they eat, but it's a really good point. It's a great point. So yeah,
it's really deep.
I'm just thinking.
I mean, this is such a deep topic. It's not just food. I mean, you know, for me and my experience in my life, being overweight, it really wasn't about food. When I made some food choices, when I like learned, oh, I got to keep my insulin level low. Oh, I should be eating less sugar. Like, yes, that was super important for me and a game changer. But really, overweight is not about food. It's about how we feel, about how we feel about ourselves. One of my coaches says to her clients, she says, you don't have a overeating problem. You have an underfeeling problem. And
wow.
Yeah. And it's true. you know, when you're like overeating, even a few extra bites, or, you know, going for the emotional eat, like eating food that we already talked about, it's because we're not willing to feel whatever feeling is there.
You want the food to take the feelings away.
Right, right, right. And the society and the food culture that we live in has made that easy for us, and has made that more than easy. They've actually tell us it's good for us. So, you know, so now we have this, we're living in this world where we have a lot of stress. There's just so many things going on in everybody's life. And I have some parents who are like, well, my child's got it pretty good. They're not that stressed, but kids are stressed, you know, in their own way. And so we live in this world now where the food supply and the screens make it easy to buffer or numb some of those negative emotions to our ill effect. It would be fine if we ate that and it wasn't wreaking havoc on our system. You know, the thing is, these very ancient human bodies that we are living in, we weren't designed to handle today's modern, highly processed foods.
Exactly. I also found for myself, you know, when I was overweight in my late teens, early 20s, I thought a lot more about food. And I think it was a vicious cycle. The more weight I gained, the more I thought about losing weight. And it kept going like that, where now I'm at a point in my life, I just don't think about it as much. It just feels a lot healthier. You know, ever since I got through that period, thankfully, I don't think as much about food. I mean, I think about it when I'm hungry and sure I like to eat and go out to eat, but it's a much different, it takes up much less mental space in my life.
Yes, for me too. And what I think one huge part of this is that we know from putting people in fMRI scanners and tracking people's hormones, if you are carrying extra weight, extra adipose tissue, your hunger hormones are different than if you were at a lower weight. And so you are hungrier. You are thinking about food more. Your brain does light up in a different way. And so that's what makes it so hard. Overweight people are hungrier, you know, and because the fat tissue is hormonally active. We used to think like, oh, it's just fat tissue. It does nothing. It just sits there. But now we know that that's incorrect.
Now, question for you. There's a lot of families that I meet where genetically there's obesity in the family. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give for a family like that?
Well, I do think for sure some people gain weight easier than other people. Yes. But what is that saying? I don't know who said it first, but somebody said genetic genes load the gun and your lifestyle pulls the trigger. I don't think people are destined to be overweight or destined by their genes to be overweight. There's a really wonderful science writer, Gary Tobes. He's written some really amazing books, and he has this great phrase that he says, those of us who fatten easily, which I kind of got a kick out of that when I read that, because I was like, oh, that's me, you know, and I think it is true. So, you know, way back in the day, we would have been the survivors. We would have been the people who stored weight easily and made it through the winter. We would have been killing it back then. But today, oh, okay, now I have this metabolic system, these genes in 2023. Okay, how am I going to figure out how I need to live? How am I going to eat? How am I going to sleep? How am I going to move? How am I going to manage my stress to be the healthiest version of myself that I can be?
I love that. And it's so true. When you go to museums and you see pictures of people in the 1700s and the royalty was always a little bit on the heavier side, it was a sign of health.
Well, there's so many good books. Dr. Richard Johnson has written this really wonderful book called Nature Wants Us to Be Fat. And, you know, when you read this book, what he really explains in a very easy to understand way is that how humans evolved, storing fat was good for us. It helped us survive. you know, the cold winters before we had houses, before we had all these modern amenities. The problem is now, you know, we've had this modern lifestyle explosion in the past 100 years. Our genes haven't changed at all. And I think understanding that, and then you can drop some of your shame and drop some of your like, oh, there must be something wrong with me. No, it's just the wonderful human body that you've been given and, you know, how your body happens to work. You're not broken. No kid is broken. No adult is broken. Your metabolism is not broken. And that you can certainly make changes and certainly get the health you want by changing your lifestyle.
Dr. Carol, if people are listening and they hopefully are inspired and love what you have to say and want more of your guidance, where can they find you?
I have a website, SheilaCarolMD.com. That would be the easiest place. My email is right on there. I have actually a free guide I created for parents too. It's called How to Make Parenting Around Food Feel Less Hard. And it's a kind of an in-depth explanation of the division of responsibility. Are you familiar with that? Ellen Satter's division of responsibility and why it's important to choose regular whole foods. So that's available for free on my website too. And I have a blog there too. So just raising parents' awareness of the importance of trying to choose whole, real food versus processed food.
And a quick point to add to that, I think it's important for parents to realize that by choosing those foods, it's not bad for the kids. I think a lot of parents are afraid to say no to their kids. They're afraid to disappoint their kids. But in the long run, it really is the best for kids and they will come to appreciate it with time.
100%. It's kind of like, you know, what I say is it's like asking your child or telling your child to put their seatbelt on. They might not want to put their seatbelt on, but you know, as the parent, it's the safest thing for your child. And so, yes, sometimes some kids are definitely going to push back. That's the nature of kids. And it's just their human brain. Their human brain is like, but you're taking away something that tastes so good for me. And, you know, okay, well, let's have it once in a while, but not as much because we're really trying to protect our health. So when parents really come at food choices from a health perspective and not just pleasing your child perspective, you know, I think that is going to be the way for parents to really step in and control what they can control to help their kids.
Well, thank you so much. This is so much fun. I love chatting with you and anybody that sees you as a coach. We could talk all day. Can you be my coach?
Yeah.
Anyone that sees you as a coach, they're so lucky. And I'm so glad to know about you. And thank you for helping all the people that you help.
Thank you, Dr. Jessica. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening. And I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of Ask Dr. Jessica. Also, if you could take a moment and leave a 5-star review wherever it is you listen to podcasts, I would greatly appreciate it. It really makes a difference to help this podcast grow. You can also follow me on Instagram at Ask Dr. Jessica. See you next Monday.